The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
What I'm going to do is introduce you to our speaker. His name's Ian, so I'm going to ask him to come up. You don't have to give him a clap, he's not.
No, that's right.
Ian, now, this is an event for young workers.
This is your future, death.
Yes, Ian, you are a worker, but You don't have the Asian gene of eternal youth, clearly.
I did, but as you get old, you turn into a sort of Anglo-Celtic sort of hairy gene. It's grim, I tell you.
Okay, so Ian, you're definitely older. You've definitely travelled through life longer than a whole heap of us here. Can you wind back the clock to when you first got a job? Can you tell us what it was and what kind of expectations did you have to wrestle with?
Well, if I go, my first job was in my father's shop. He was the local chemist. And every afternoon after school, through sort of senior primary and year seven, I would go down and deliver drugs to people.
So you were a drug trafficker?
I was a drug dealer. My man was the leading drug dealer in Rose Bay. And but I think, I don't know, what I wasn't aware of the expectation, except you had to turn up. You couldn't escape. It was kind of fun because you rode a push bike around and you got the occasional 10-cent tip, which is pretty exciting. And and just watching the old man in a shop, it's why I'm such a pest in shops, because I watched him be unbelievably polite to people who were idiots. And if he said he'd have it in by tomorrow, there was no such thing as, sorry. If we couldn't get the drug, I'd sometimes have to ride from Rose Bay up to Bondi Junction, which was not that far for a good cyclist, but when you're a kid, it wasn't. And if they didn't have it, my mother would drive to the other side of Sydney to go and get it. So just seeing a shop where if Dad said it would be there tomorrow, it would be there tomorrow. So it makes me a nightmare in a shop.
You know? Right. And a nightmare to work with, can I say?
In most cases.
Because we work together.
Yeah, we do. Very close.
Very close, just on the opposite part. Okay. Fast forward now.
Yes.
What are your expectations now in a different stage in life? And how do you look back to your earlier expectations when you were, younger, when you got, working, graduated, married, things like that? What? Give us a bit of hindsight, and maybe a bit of advanced wisdom for us.
I tell you, one of the things that, having been asked to speak on this topic, as I've studied expectations, I've just become aware, and I'm going to just touch on it for a few seconds in the talk, there's few more important things that control your happiness and how you shape your life than your expectations, but most of us hardly ever think of them. Yeah. So there's one of these great engines that shape the way we live. We don't often choose our own expectations. We catch them from our culture, and we catch them from our parents. In the same way as I didn't choose to speak English, I just did it because my mum and dad did, and my culture did. There's just expectations are like that. And I became a Christian when I was 19, and I realised when I was 30 that I had this deep engine that had just been purring away. I remember driving up to see my parents. Coming into Rose Bay, we'd gone through Double Bay. We didn't live anywhere there, but we'd driven through Double Bay. And you go round, there's a school Cranbrook, there's a lovely police station on the corner. You come up and Rose Bay opens up in front of you. And it's very beautiful. And I suddenly realised, at this moment, I thought, I'm never going to own a house here. Now, the significance of that was, I just realised that I had always assumed that I would. At a level at which I'd never even been conscious, I had assumed that I would one day own a house in roughly the same area as my parents, but better, because I was going to marry money. That was my plan. And if only it was a joke, but that was my plan. That's why I started doing a commerce degree at New South Wales Uni. I thought I'll marry it. I'm not the woman, he gets the money. And I had a list of four or five girls, and I knew which one I wanted to marry, and that was, I had a long-term plan. But I just realized that there was this expectation that I would be rich, and I would own a house like Mum and Dad. At that stage, I was in Christian ministry, and I'm a financial idiot. So I realized, I'll be lucky if I own an outdoor dunny out near Campbelltown, you know, let alone a house in Rose Bay, which has gone from a place where teachers and people could own a house to where, you know, people like that are never going to own a house in Rose Bay. So I think that sort of expectation, I was kind of shocked. I was shocked to realize it was just there, and it was unknown, and yet it was just there. And I think you're probably more aware of your expectations, but it's just shocking, really, how they just come out of nowhere. And yeah. they will make you disappointed, they'll make you cranky, they'll make you angry, they'll make you want to manipulate people, steal from people, because your expectations can really drive us in our behaviour in a way that we hardly ever reflect on them.
Hmm. Thank goodness for something like tonight. And talking about your wonderful property, I know that you own a boat.
A yacht.
What is it made of?
It's made of tin, and it's about 12 foot long, which is about 3 metres long, and it's the smallest and humblest boat on Rose Bay Harbour, Sydney Harbour, and it now leaks all the time. I've just given it three huge coats of paint as a last chance before I have to bin it. Tin boats, and we got it when it was already old, when I got it about 20 years ago.
That's another story for another time.
Right.
Anyway.
But
anyhow, okay, I'll lead you to it.
Yeah, so if any of you have got a few spare yachts, give it to someone who needs it. Rightio. Great expectations. I want to suggest, sum it up like this. Give up your small ambitions. Give up your small ambitions. If you've just inherited a set of expectations from your family and from your culture, I'm guessing that although they might seem strenuous and a real stretch to you now, they're small compared to the sort of things that could come down the road if you give up your small ambitions and go for great expectations. There's 1,000 ways that we could have approached tonight. Well, that's an understatement. What is an expectation? Well, an expectation is something that you just kind of expect will happen. So it's not wishing happening, it's not hope it might happen, it's stronger than that. You expect it will happen. So, you know, so I used to coach a football team and I worked at a boys' school for a few years, and I used to say to the boys, look, this is a contact sport. You can expect to get hurt. If you don't want to get hurt, go and play chess. There are certain things that, you know, it's just part of the package. And you just expect it. And if you're not expecting it, if you think, say, rugby, which is a sport, really, it's really, but it's a, I love it, but it means nothing. It's great fun. But you know, if you don't expect to get hurt and suddenly someone tackles you, you might punch them in the head. You might think, what are you doing? Get off me. But you just got to realize an expectation is something which is, it's like a very strong belief that something ought to happen. So there's kind of wishes, there's wants, there's hopes, there's expectancy, and probably, and the next one is demanding things. Now, quite a lot of work's done by certain sorts of psychiatrists and psychologists on this question of expectation. So some of you who are interested in this area will know the name Martin Seligman and W. Scott Peck, two leaders in some of these areas of the study of human happiness. And they're absolutely convinced that much more determinative of your happiness than what happens to you, whether it be, as happened to my sister, you become a quadriplegic at age 22, or whatever, good things may happen to you, much more determinative of your happiness in life than what happens to you is your expectations and managing them and controlling them. So if you expect to be earning $1,000 a week and only get $700, you'll be an unhappy camper. If you dreamt one day of earning $400 and you get exactly the same pay, you'll be really happy. So much of what makes us happy or sad is to do with our expectations. These things really drive us. And yet, again, these guys who study this at depth say that roughly 80% of human expectations, either of yourself or of others, is never verbalized. So there are these expectations. You expect, say, at work or in your family, particularly if you get married, expectations are massively significant to whether or not you will be happy in marriage or not. And your partner's expectations of you. I used to do this when I worked in a local church. We used to do this marriage preparation thing called Prepare or Enrich. And there was a series of gazillions of questions and put through the computer. And that all the questions were sort of muddled up. But one of the key things it indicated, to me anyhow, if this was liable to be a happy and enduring marriage, was a thing called realistic expectations. That because if you don't go into a relationship with realistic expectations and with a similarity of expectation, you are going to run into conflict, and often you won't even know why. You'll be angry with your partner or with your work colleague. You'll be angry with them or hurt by them. And they've actually done nothing wrong. There was just an expectation that you had of them that they didn't know about. And expectations, 80% of them, unverbalized. And yet these are the things that will make or break our happiness and make or break relationships. An enormous amount of studies of conflict in the workplace are to do with unstated expectations that your boss has of you. I read a guy read on this the other day, and he thought he was saying something good. I thought he was a lunatic because he wrote out what he expected from his personal assistant. And the number of things that seem to me to be not in the obvious job description, like his or her capacity to deal with first-time callers and things like this, or there's, as he went through, he gave all his list of, he wrote down all his expectations. He was saying, it's the first time I'd ever done it. I'm thinking he's going to give himself a kick in the head at the end, say, what an idiot I was to expect any person to do this. But he thought he'd done well because he's at least put it on paper. But no wonder he hadn't had much joy with his personal assistants till then. So that these are important. And you'll have expectations of yourself. If you've had a highly successful brother or sister who's got just radically different temperament, they might look much like you, but they're radically different set of gifts, you kill yourself by expecting yourself to be like them. Or thinking maybe that your parents want you to be like them. And your parents might. Parents can be as silly as kids sometimes. I remember when I dropped out of commerce, UNSW, I'd given it a fair chance. I'd done it for a week. And, I was just amazed. It took hours and hours to enroll in the course. It took about 2 seconds to get out. I didn't tell my mother, because I thought she'd go off ahead. And finally, after I hadn't been going to commerce, which was sort of 8 hours of lectures or something, so it wasn't a great deal. But I told her I dropped out. I thought she was going to go crazy. Because she loves university, she loves the life of the mind, etc. Not that commerce has got much of that, but it does other things, it's important. But, you know, it's not like an arts degree where you're actually studying thought and, you know, get your taxi license, but I thought I knew what Mum would do. She was delighted that I dropped out. I knew her pretty well. I thought I was frightened of her reaction. She said it was a stupid degree for you to do, and you were never going to, you know, be a businessman. I didn't want to say, well, I'm going to marry all this money, Mum. I thought she wouldn't appreciate that. But just expectations. I think at this point, I want to move on, but just say, do begin to try and be aware of them, even read up on them a little bit, because they are so important to human happiness. The expectation you have of yourself, of others, of friends, of romance partners, all those sorts of things, and frankly, of God. And when I meet people who are cranky with God, it's often because they've had an unstated set of expectations of what God damn well should do. And if it doesn't work out like that, and we've got all these expectations of God, rarely do we stop and ask him personally what his expectations of us may be. But in this this book that was alluded to, Great Expectations. Now, I haven't read the book. I always like to be honest about this. In fact, I haven't even touched the book. I don't even know what it looks like, except it's thick. It's not as thick as that one, thankfully. Mark's such an impressive dad, that impressive book. The book that my wife and I used to read was called Babies and Other Hazards of Sex. How to Build a Small Human with Tools You Have Lying Around the House. It was much more humorous. That got us through. But Charles Dickens writes this book, Great Expectations. I won't bore you with the story. I know it because I watched it. I watched one of the many movie versions, the one made by the BBC, so it's serious. But the way it works is there's this kid, Pip. I'm not going to ruin the whole story for you. It's this kid, Pip, and he's an orphan, and he's being brought up in this family, and his great hope is he might become an apprentice blacksmith and make a few bucks doing that. In the end, out of nowhere, a guy turns up called Mr. Jager. He's a lawyer. And Pip discovers that he has got a wealthy benefactor who wants to remain anonymous and turns his life around on a dime. He suddenly becomes a rich man, changes his clothes, he becomes a gentleman. He goes off to London. And at the end of the first, because it's over two episodes in the BBC thing, the lawyer says to him, "You are a man with great expectations." So his whole life has been turned because he's suddenly become a rich guy. Now, as it turns out, most of the people in that story are very unhappy. Various expectations are not met. Pip, in the end, doesn't win. There's a woman who spends almost the entire movie in a wedding dress, even as an old woman, even as she dies, because of what happened to her when her great expectations were ruined. So it's a very interesting look at this human drive and how things can change and turn on a moment of discovery, a phone call. And let me read you the passage that you've got at the top of that sheet there. It's two little stories Jesus tells that some scholars of this work, of the New Testament, think actually captures the entire essence of this whole thing Jesus is doing, bringing this new thing into the world. And it's just two little stories. First, Matthew 13. Here's what Jesus says. "The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again. Then in his joy, he went and sold all that he had and bought that field. And again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and he bought it." Now, these are two very closely related stories, aren't they, of a moment of discovery. One guy discovers it by accident, the other guy's looking for it. So the first guy is a worker in a field. It's obviously not his field, he's employed. And he discovers treasure in the field. Now, this was common enough in those days. There was no bank, and the way that you kept stuff safe was you hid it. Even in England and stuff like that, occasionally guys dig up millions of dollars, millions of pounds worth of gold. People have dug up. I was reading one the other day that was discovered. All this stuff from Celtic and Roman times, beautiful stuff, had been hidden in the ground. Why? Well, where else can you put stuff that's valuable if you think if the crooks might come? And if you happen to die, it's gone. So it doesn't actually belong to the guy whose field it's in. Some people get really defensive, particularly if you own property. You think, "Oh, you should have given that." No. The treasure didn't belong to the guy who owned the field. It was just there by accident. The guy discovers it, thinks, "I saw this," covers it up, goes home. He's so excited because suddenly his life has got a whole series of new possibilities by this treasure. Sells everything he has. Everything. He sells, and it uses two words in the original testament. He sells absolutely everything he has to buy that field, to get that treasure. And he sells it all happily. The second story is like it. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant who's looking for fine pearls. He's looking for beautiful pearls. In the time of Jesus, pearls were you couldn't do anything with diamonds. They were too hard to do anything with. So if you wanted something that was beautiful and decorative and expensive, pearls were the thing. You got dodgy pearls from the Red Sea, but that's close to Israel. You got better pearls near Persia. You got the best pearls near India and Sri Lanka. So the best pearls you had to go a long way to get. This merchant, he was hunting for the finest of pearls. And he has a day when he suddenly discovers one. See that? He discovers one. He found one of great value. This wasn't just a beautiful one. This was beautiful and of real value. He went away and sold everything and got that. So you see, in these stories, Jesus is saying, you want to know what it's like to meet God? You want what it's like to enter the kingdom of God, to become one of his people, to be caught up in a relationship with the king of the universe? You want to know what it's like? It's like discovering treasure. You may discover it by accident, which is kind of how it happened to me, really. I wasn't really looking for God. He kind of came and found me. And suddenly you think, oh, how about that? But some people look for ages. They've got a hunch that there's something more, and they're looking and looking and looking. So these are the two sorts of people. And there's this moment where they go, oh, wow, here it is. Here's this treasure this beautiful thing, this magnificent, this thing that can change my life. I've just got to get it. And there's this moment of discovery and this moment of reversal. Suddenly, all their past treasures become irrelevant. All the things that they might have died to protect in their home, all their whatever, all they are now is they consider, how much can I get for that so I can get this? So if you were one of their friends and you saw the guy come home from his day working in the field, selling flipping everything, even his golf clubs, right? And his iPhone, and you name it, he's selling everything. You might think he's gone crazy. He's lost his head. But you don't know what he's found. If you knew what he'd found, you'd see he's doing the most logical, rational thing imaginable. But if you don't see what he's found, he's just a lunatic. He's a fanatic. Same with the guy with the pearl. So there's a discovery. There's a complete reversal. What used to be your pride and joy, now, get rid of that, right? In order to get the thing that is really ultimately valuable. And the sacrifice, the selling of everything, is done joyfully. It's happily. Because he suddenly found a whole new universe opening up with a whole set of great expectations. Because in the end, the sort of expectations our culture gives us, and it'll be partly through our family and partly through the media, is just to be a good little consumer, live a nice, dull, boring life, you know, work hard at school, why? Right? So you can go to uni, why? So you can do the right degree, why? So you can get a good job, why? So you can get a good house, what then? Well, find someone to get married to. And then what? Then have children? Good. Then you've got to send them to the right private school, unless you can get them into a selective school, 3,000 hours of, you know, after-school training so you can avoid the all that stuff. Why? Why? And you work hard, why? You get to the end, and like a very close relative of mine sat in the car the other day as we were going around that road through Darling Harbour onto the bridge. He said to me, he's retired, he said, it was quite amazing. He said, Ian, you do everything they tell you to do. You go to uni, which he did. You work hard. And he was an engineer, and he said, I was lucky sometimes because when the mining thing would burst at various times in Canada, he said, I managed to keep my job the whole way through. Became a project manager. He worked in Saudi Arabia. He worked in India. He worked in all sorts of exotic places, Canada. But he's brought up his kids, and he's now wealthy. He spends an awful lot of his time going to interesting places. But he sat in the car and he said, why? What now? Well, I didn't quite have the heart to say, well, basically, you just spend from now for the next year just filling in time until you're dead. Right? You know, he has done, he has fulfilled all the expectations and more than our society. He's been a good little consumer. He's been a good little saver. He's been a good little professional. He's brought up his kids, and now he's just waiting to die. And at that end of life, he doesn't seem to have a sense of deep satisfaction. He's kind of proud that he pulled it off. You know, he did it. There's been some damage along the way. But what Jesus is saying is, you are actually made for more than that. That vague inkling we have, surely there's got to be more than just this glorified life of a wombat. Because in the end, the way that Australians live, and I don't know what it's like in other cultures, is it's just about having a big hole, it's about having a big burrow to live in that you can impress your neighbours with. Sending a little wombats off to the best wombat school so they can just repeat the same drama again and again and then get to the end and go, let's keep smiling, it's all pretty pointless. And every now and then there's a sense, is there more? And Jesus saying, yeah, there is. You know, one of the best-selling books in the last 20 years, of non-fiction in particular, began with this shocking statement. Life is not about you. I was amazed that that book sold millions and millions and turned its writer into a multi-millionaire, and he then poured all that money into doing good. He drives the same rubbish car he did beforehand. It's the discovery that life is not about you, it's actually about God and his kingdom. Not about your kingdom and building your little castle and paying the banks off for 25 years just in time for you to die so your kids can squabble over it and they can cut it up and, you know, go for their third trip to Europe, whatever you do when you get your parents' inheritance, all that stuff that we just do. In the end, it's about someone else. And humans find peculiarly, our deepest joy and satisfaction in someone else's kingdom. Because you are actually, at least play with this as a possibility, that you're not just a little machine that produces wealth and buys and sells and fills in the retirement time until you're dead, but you're actually designed for something richer and deeper. And humans, I think, have a sense of that often. We search for it in romance. That normally hurts us when we do that. But this discovery that reverses everything and sends us off to a radical way of life in joy that Jesus talks about, the discovery of the treasure, the discovery of the pearl, either by accident or because you've been looking for it, and that, this is it. Jesus says, that's what I'm bringing you. It's actually not about you. In the words of a wonderful guy who was an atheist for many years, one of England's most famous atheists, and became a Christian in the twilight of his life, and he spoke about the dark little dungeon of our own egos. He said, that's what Jesus wants to set you free from. The dark little dungeon of your own egos. And yet, so many of the anthems of our age are all about selfishness. Let it go, let it go. Creepy little creatures they are singing that song anyhow. But you know, you look at the words. I mean, it's quite a cute little song and it's got some nice things. She's going to give it a go. She's going to stop living in that car. But it's in the end, it's going to be about her, and there's no right or wrong because it's going to be about her. And why do we love it? Why does our culture love it? Why does it get Oscars? Because it's an anthem to our poor, blind culture. Caught up in the dark little dungeon of our own ego, and Jesus saying, no, the treasure is actually finding the release. I'm actually made to be a planet, not the sun. I can learn to orbit around the person I was designed to orbit around and reflect his light rather than pretending that I'm a sun when you can't be. And what you find in the treasure is the love that even blokes are designed for. In the end, human beings, we are addicted to love. We really are. And a lot of the hard work that men do trying to be so rich and successful and all that nonsense is really we want something like love. Something like to be valued and to be taken seriously and to be treasured and to be honoured. What you find in God is the only love that ultimately satisfies that heart deeply. Yeah, we hide from it sometimes because it might hurt us. We try loving various people and it hurts sometimes, and they hurt us because they're as broken as we are. You know, there's a fella called Mozart. We were not contemporaries at school. But his one of his names is Amadeus. Do you know what the word Amadeus means? Anyone? It means beloved by God. What a beautiful name. Right? And in the end, to realise that my name is not just Ian Roderick Powell. My name really is Ian Amadeus Roderick Powell. It doesn't matter much to me whether you like me or not. Well, it matters a little bit. Well, it matters a lot, really. But ultimately, if you all hate me, I'll be okay. Because the God who made the universe, he values me. I'm beloved by God. You only discover that in the kingdom of heaven that Jesus talks about, particularly through the death. That God loves me enough to die for me. I love my kids enough to die for them. I hope I'd die for them. We're all more cowardly and selfish than we'd like to think we are. I'm pretty sure I'd die for my wife. I don't think I'd die for my mum. She's 93. She wouldn't want me to. But I would have hoped. You know, but to die for someone. And that's how much God has loved me, and that's how much he loves you. Even when I was an atheist, God loved me. And we find that. That's part of the treasure. We find a cause to live for. Humans are designed to be part of something bigger, not just to be another brick in the wall. This is what that relative I was telling about was feeling. This sort of sense of, all right, I've done it, and I've done it very successfully, but so what? What does it all amount to? Not much, really. At church on Sunday night, there was a lady called Julie. She's 75 years of age, and she's going out to be a missionary. Now, you mightn't like missionaries, but she's going out to be a missionary in a really hard little community to work with. She became a Christian when she was in her mid-30s. She was talking to my wife after service. She said, I just wish I'd become a Christian earlier. All those years when I could have been involved in what God is doing. And to find your... I'm not suggesting you should all go and be missionaries. I'm saying to find this purpose that you're designed for, to be part of something big and something that matters and something that lasts, and to be caught up in what he's doing. Now, you may serve God in a very different way to the way I will. For the sake of the world, I hope you will. But we'll find our part in the kingdom, our part of love. You can have this great confidence It's one of my favourite verses. It's from the Old Testament where God says this: I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. And it keeps hammering in the original language this word plans. You know, I plan the plans that I have for you. Plans to give you a future and a hope. They will involve hardship. One of the great things you learn from the Bible is my expectations of life always involve hardship. One of the stupid things in our culture. One of the other best-selling books in the last couple of decades was by W. Scott Peck, called The Road Less Traveled. It's also got a shocking beginning. It starts like this: life is difficult. Right? This is a great truth. And he says, until you embrace that truth, you'll never know how to live. But we spend a lot of our time whining about the difficulties in our culture rather than just learning to live with them and overcome them. But life will be difficult, but God has his good plans for his people. And lastly, you can actually look the future ultimately in the face. We spend a lot of time in our culture pretending that death isn't really real and never looking at the one certainty. We get spooked into spending a lot of money on superannuation. I'm not against superannuation. It's very wise. We keep being frightened. You need more, you need more, you need more. Right? Whoever thinks about their death? Who's allowed to encourage the one certainty? Some of us in this room will never own a house. Some of us will never have sex. Some of us will never reach retirement. But we'll all die. The one flipping certainty. And yet our culture will encourage you to live like an idiot and pretend it doesn't happen. But when you get caught up with God, you can look death in the face happily. Because Jesus not only died for you in love, but he crushed death when he rose again from it. And so, you know, things like that. What no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, what no human mind can imagine, is the things that God has prepared for those who love him. Great expectations, great love, an enduring love, a purpose that will last and stretch you. Great confidence that in the hard times and the good times, God is working out his good plans, and the ability to look the future in the face. One guy I know called Tim, I don't know him anymore, unfortunately, but Tim was a guy who was in the kingdom of heaven, had made this discovery, happily given everything up to be with Jesus, to live with him and for him. He discovered one weekend, he went home on Friday with a headache. I won't bore you with what a great guy Tim was. Had the perfect job at Walt Disney. Beautiful musician, cared for the poor. Has a headache. Takes himself off to St. Vincent's Hospital Sunday. Within a couple of days, discovers that he's got some sort of a brain tumour. And within what seemed, if I remember, about a month or so, he was dead. On the day before he died, his Bible study group came to see him. Tim. We were all a bit shattered because it just was like that. He went from being, you know, this picture of life to... and he'd lost the ability to speak as the brain tumour had done its work. But he could still think. And he would do this thing where they'd go A, B, C, he'd squeeze the hand and then they'd do predictive texting and he could talk to them through that. And on the night, the last night, some of his friends came to see him at St. Vincent's Hospital. We all knew he was going to be dead within 24 hours and he knew it. He typed out on their hands, "I am so excited." He didn't want to die. Now, humans are wired for life. But knowing that that was where he was going to go, he understood that it was exciting to go to that place where the plans of God would be perfectly fulfilled and he'd see it. So in terms of great expectations, I've suggested two things. Two things. So I couldn't do commerce. Two things. one is to become conscious of your expectations and perhaps ask people at home, in relationships, at work, what their expectations of you are. So to become aware of that. And to find great expectations. To discover the treasure. And if you're not sure if Jesus really is the treasure, do yourself a favour and give yourself a chance to look. And Mark will give some options afterwards. And if you are, you know, caught up in this kingdom of God thing, throw yourself in a hook, line and sinker. Don't hold anything back from this, because that's the joy is found when you do what these guys did. Sell everything to make sure that you undisputed first place, because he's the one person who deserves it, that place in your life. Well, I'm going to stop there, so we've got some time for questions, maybe, perhaps, possibly.
We were going to have time for questions, but food is just about to come. So if I can all take you to the back of your program, and we're going to do questions in a different way. Firstly, I need you to do something which you never do at events. I want you to grab out your smartphone or your mobile phone And I'd like you to fill in the e-feedback. So if you look at the top, there's a tiny URL. I would like you to open your either iPhone 5S. So I'm going to open my Safari. And I'm going to type in tinyurl.com, Great Expectations 2014. I had to put 2014 because somebody else obviously had just Great Expectations. So if you type it in, you'll go to a document, and that's our feedback form from the night. I hope we're not going to crash any particular service as we were trying to go. Can you get there? Has everyone got it? Yep, I've got 4G, I'm with Internode. If you've got Vodafone, bad luck. But anyway, fill that in, please. The reason why I'm doing that is because of a short period of time, you'll see down there, there's actually something, a box for you. Any questions you'd like answered by one of the City Bible Forum team. So if you have any questions from Ian from his talk, please type it in at Ian or one of the other team members whose photos are at the bottom of this. Please take this home. We'll get back to you by the end of the week answering that question. So sorry that we can't have kind of more interactive, but we're going to have to do that today, just like that. Obviously, for us to kind of respond to you, we'll need your email address, so that's a compulsory field. If we have a mobile phone number, we can. That'll be great as well. Employer. Why we like to know that is because sometimes, you may not know, but there are other people who are investigating about Christianity or asking questions, inquiring. They might work in your office, and sometimes we actually hold groups inside firms. So that's why I want that. And year entering work is just so that we know how far you're along. Because we have different things for young workers who are just starting. You know, if it's your first month at work as opposed to you've been working for 3 or 4 years. How did you hear about expectations? Just tick the boxes which are relevant there. If you came with a friend, please tick that, and please tick other and give us their name so we can know how everyone heard this event. I trust you're all very sophisticated people and you have great thumbs, so you can keep on scrolling down. The second last set of questions is, how can we help? Now, has everyone been able to get onto the document? Yeah? Cool, great. How can we help? There are 6 things. And if you look at the back of this outline, there are the descriptions of the things. You see, we'd like to do more than just help answer your question for the day. We'd like to get alongside you in some way. And the ways we can do that is if you'd like to sign up for the short course for the curious, it's a 5-week course examining the teachings of Jesus from the ground up. We look at source documentation, we look at history. Is this reliable? Can you actually know what Jesus is on about? He's a significant figure. Does he say something more? Ian Powell will be taking that, and it starts on Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., 30th July. If you'd like to sign up for that, tick that, and I will email you. I coordinate that course. I'll email with all the details. If you've got something on Wednesday, not a problem. Still tick the box, and we will find a group for you. We may even form a group around you. That's how keen we are to get alongside you. The next one is join a Bible reading group. Ian helpfully and provocatively explained 1, 2, 3 verses of the Bible. It's a very small segment of a very big book. If you'd like to sit alongside others and read the Bible together, tick the join a Bible reading group. It's very simple. We sit down, we read the Bible, and we discuss what it means. We ask the questions that we all have when we read a book. And there are groups that meet in the morning, lunchtime, after work. We can find a time for you. The third thing is sign up to the Monday Morning Munch. The Munch is back. Basically, we've realised that workers are busy, and they often don't have input into their spiritual lives. Because we just kind of, maybe like me, Monday morning, zombie, go do my thing. But the Monday Morning Munch is designed to give you 5 minutes where it makes you think of something bigger. How does work fit into the bigger picture? How do I fit into the bigger picture? And we'll have 3 or 4 blogs written by various people, some young workers, some mums, about expectations. How do they handle them? And how does the Bible help us? Sign that up. It'll come to you Sunday night. You can read it on the train-in, and it'll be something just to keep your mind ticking on this topic. Invitations of forum talks. We have lunchtime talks Wednesday and Thursday in two parts of the city. we're looking at the films and kind of what Hollywood's done. A lot of films from the Bible. Can anyone name a couple of them? Passion of the Christ. That's, yeah, but recently, Noah, Son of God, was an old one. We've got Prince Exodus coming up. Prince of Egypt, that was your time. But there are a whole... which is great news. All right, Kerry. But anyway, there you go. So sign up. We'll invite you. We'll give you the time for that. Second last thing. Invitation to a special event. If you look at the box here, Tuesday, 22nd of July, to be announced on the 9th. Tori didn't mention this in an interview, but Megan mentors young workers at work. That's kind of part of her job. And she's been kind enough to give us, in a fortnight's time, a night where she'll actually give young workers tips about how to succeed, what are the barriers, what are the things that young workers often stumble over, and how does she coach them. That's something which no one else knows outside of this room, but something special. Because you're here, you can... tick the box there if you'd like to come to that. We'll give you the time. It's going to be 6:30. We'll give you the venue. If you want to bring some friends, come along. It'll just be some time with Megan. I'll ask her, interview some questions, and also hear a little bit more about her journey. We're really thankful that a senior associate would actually give us another night. So that's something which is pretty privileged. So tick that if you'd like to find out more, or you have friends who you find that helpful. And the last one is, last box is, if you'd like to find out more, this is our third Young Works event. We have another one coming up. If you'd like to find out more, tick that. Obviously, we love feedback, so let us know if there's a positive or negative, put it in. And the black button is submit. And it will go up to the cloud, Google Docs will do its thing, and I won't have to spend half of tomorrow looking at sheets of paper and writing down, trying to read your messy handwriting. So if you can all do that, and I'll give you a couple of moments to do that. Otherwise, that's pretty much the end of the night. 8:30, if you need a head. Food, the rest, third course is going to come in, so please feel free to eat, drink. But the last thought, if you look on the front, and this is the last thing, just take a message. Kathy Chan, who's one of the young workers, designed this for us. This is our logo. But I think this speaks to what Ian was on about tonight, which is, you're the man in a big shoe, feels pressured. What kind of expectations are on me? I feel oppressed, I don't know where to turn. But did you notice that Kathy put it on a highway? The bigger question to be asking about life is, where are you heading? And what is at the end of the highway? If you find out what is at the end, is it a pearl or is it a pebble, will affect how you handle living in the ship. In actual fact, it will unlock so much more. Highway, shoe, figure it out yourself. But that's kind of what we've been doing. And I really hope you've enjoyed... Ian doesn't like this. What we're going to do? One email, of course. Thank you for unpacking the Bible for us, Ian. Again, email any questions for us. Otherwise, thanks for coming, and we'll hopefully see you at our last presentation.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.